Hi there, I'm Chris Payne, and you're listening to Two People, a podcast about Richmond. And you heard that right, it's Chris, not Blaine. Today I make my audio debut for a special episode. Blaine and I sit down and talk, and we talk about Richmond, why we do a podcast, and becoming dads. That's right, becoming dads. At the time I'm recording this, Blaine and his wife have already given birth to a beautiful baby boy, and my wife and I are up next. So, we're going to take a brief hiatus from recording shows to learn how to be fathers. But don't worry, it's not a goodbye, it's a see you later. This is Two People.
I don't know, I feel like you need to give me the, Chris Payne.
Chris Payne?
How you doing?
Welcome.
Thanks for joining us.
Okay. When you have a podcast, you could just start whenever you want to.
That's true, if the red light is on.
Yeah. Chris Payne, thank you for being on your own show here.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
The man behind the curtain. You're the guy that I shout out at the end of the show all the time.
Yeah. It's about time the people hear my voice, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. I think they've been waiting for it. Yeah. So I want to talk about a bunch of things. I want to talk about you and me. I want to talk about how the podcast came to be.
I like that.
Do a little looking back, you know, some of your favorite moments. Some of the dumb stuff we done. Talk about dad stuff. You and I are both going to be dads soon.
So soon.
What's that all about?
Man, I'll tell you.
I don't even know. I
feel like you and I haven't talked about this enough. That we're like about to have babies at the same time. But I feel like I haven't called you to freak out yet. You know what I mean? Like we're in the same spot.
Is that coming?
What I mean is like I could talk about it right now.
Right. And our wives are a week apart.
Yeah,
right?
1 week, yeah.
Your wife is what?
April 5th.
And mine is April 8th. Wow. 3 days.
So not even a week.
What?
The highly high percentage that we'll be at the hospital at the same time together.
Yeah. I look forward to that. I'll see you there, man.
Yeah.
With like the birth balls and the bathing tub? Is that a thing?
Yeah, well, we won't be... We won't be doing that. But.
So I'm always interested whenever somebody has a side gig, what they actually do. Neither you nor I make money from this podcast. Mm-hmm. Our podcast, this is not our job.
Mm-hmm. Some people think that, though.
Can you tell me what you do during the day? And also, what is your Richmond claim to fame?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Ooh, saucy.
Man, you're the guy with the questions. I like it. Yeah, so for a long time, I was freelance doing creative work that incorporated recording audio. So,
Hence.
We work on a podcast together. But more recently, I took a position at Capital One.
Heard of it.
Financial Incorporated. That is not the name. that is not on the stock exchange. But yeah, doing similar stuff or doing creative work to help tell stories internally about company culture, and to help improve culture and help people find more purpose and meaning in their jobs at Capital One.
Through video, audio, storytelling.
Yeah, that's my portion. I'm on a team of six people who we all kind of do different stuff.
Got it.
But my job is to help tell the story. You know, tell the story of what we're doing and like what good cultural artifacts are, or, you know, like good culture things that are happening. Right. At Capital One. So,
your hair looks great right now, by the way.
Is it the sun?
Super solid.
Thank you.
Capital One. And what would you say your Richmond claim to fame is?
Oh man. Okay. So like we talked about this question and I was feeling like, kind of torn by that because I like talking about my claim to fame, but it also feels a little far back from my current corporate days.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a whole conversation for another podcast, I think. But I would say my Richmond claim to fame was helping to sort of stand up and run the Listening Room, which was a monthly show series where there was no talking during the music. And when we started, we ran it for 5 years. And when we started in...
Which is a long time to do a thing, by the way.
In particularly in Richmond.
Right.
Was that the right use of that word?
In particularly?
Yeah.
In Richmond in particular?
Yes, in Richmond.
Well, yeah.
In particular.
We understand what you're saying.
And when we first started it, it was like, you know, there weren't that many good music clubs in town. And if you wanted to go see a show, it would be at the bars and, you know, for the smaller local bands and stuff. And people were, you know, the musicians I was friends with and working with were kind of tired of competing with the bar crowd, which there's not, you know, that's fine. It was just kind of a byproduct of, you know, having no really good small to mid-sized right. venue.
It's like, hey guys, I'm trying to,
yeah,
we're trying to play music over here. If yeah, you can just keep it down.
I poured my heart and soul into the song, right. And it's beautiful. And, you know, I think that even people who were not even just singer songwriters, but were in like rock bands started to feel the same thing. So we wanted to give just the space for people. Well, we wanted to give the space to musicians to, you know, connect with the audience, perform their songs for the audience. What we didn't expect is that there was a whole crowd of people, like music lovers, that wanted that same experience mm-hmm. from the audience side. So,
and you'd basically book that show, and there would be what, two or three artists every month, mm-hmm. right? There would be artwork, like a poster for each show, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we would have a local artist do the poster, and then we'd also have like local coffee and some pastries. Like Ipanema gave us coffee cake for like the first 3 years, and some other people donated right. stuff like that. So it was a real kind of community effort, and a lot of people, like I said, were really into the idea, yeah. and we weren't necessarily expecting that. So
do you miss it at all?
I miss it a lot. Yeah. Why? Well, I think it was my solid connection to sort of the art world, music world, here in Richmond. And I'm still friends with a lot of those folks, but we kind of had that cause to rally around. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
your tribe.
Yeah. So to speak, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, like there was just, it was kind of spiritual, the whole thing. And, cause it was just like a moment when you, I think it helped people, looking back, like help people kind of slow down, and you know, also gave you an opportunity in the audience to be quiet for mm-hmm. for an hour or two,
even like quieting yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, I liked being able to rally around a cause like that. But you know, we started off with like there was like 12 or more people who volunteered to help put it on, and then just slowly, you know, course of time, you know, some people had children and, had to move and do other things. And then it was basically just me doing booking and setting mm-hmm. up all the shows and stuff. And then I started traveling a little bit for work. And so, we had like a really good season and a good end of a season. And then Jonathan Vassar, who's sort of, baby, the idea, it was his idea. Just said, hey, I think we should go out on a good note, and yeah, that was in 2014. Yeah,
and so, here we are.
Yeah,
and here we are.
So why don't you tell me about your job?
Oh,
and your Richmond claim to fame.
Richmond claim to fame. Yeah, my day job is I work for a brand strategy consulting firm. Usually, people are like, "What the heck is that?"
Well, anytime you put consulting in there,
it's yeah, like, it's like, what do you got? I don't, you know, what is that really? Mm-hmm. No, so the two guys that I work with, they were at Play, which then was acquired by Profit, which mm-hmm. was kind of an innovation brand strategy firm. They left, started a little firm called Joe Smith, which we still are. We're now owned by Padilla CRT. Companies hired us to develop their brands, so... yes, it is like the look and feel. That's like the branding side, but it's also understanding what is a company's purpose, like what is actually the human need that you're meeting in the world. How do you bring that to life in the experience of the brand? And so that could be externally in products and services. It could also be internally in, I don't know, if you go to Verizon and the person at the counter seems checked out, they're not engaged with that brand. So how do you internally help bring a brand to life? Mm. So. Mm. Yeah, and I think a part of my motivation for the podcast is how can I take some of those skills that I use in my day to day and apply them in a context that I think is more Richmond focused. My Richmond claim to fame is probably, oh, I guess it's almost like a decade ago now.
No.
Yeah. Where does time go? I was in a YouTube video called The River City Rap with some of the folks from the Park Group. I was working at a bank at the time. And one of the, someone from Y Richmond who worked at the bank said, hey, we want to make an interesting video, kind of like Lazy Sunday from SNL, mm-hmm. sort of that kind of a vibe. So yeah, there were basically six of us that helped to write it and filmed it in like a day. You can look up River City Rap. I play the role of Craig, which Craig. Is not my real name. I don't know. I think we just wrote the script. I don't know why Craig was the name, but... Yo. As he plays it from his phone.
I just looked it up.
That's my voice right there.
I feel like many of our listeners would be familiar with this work of art.
Yeah. The thing that I'm most proud of in that video is we were nervous that it was going to be like mobile white folks like, hey, making this rap video. And the kids that you see dancing at the very end, mm-hmm. we filmed it in Jefferson Park in Church Hill. And I just walked over to them and was like, hey, we're doing this thing. Can you guys come over and like be a part of this video we're trying to make? And they were like, yeah. So like the cheering here at the end was very heartwarming to me that it wasn't just this like millennial funny thing, but in a very small way, we were trying to reach out.
Yeah, I mean, we were friends already by the time you made this. And I thought it was great, not just because I'm your friend, but... I felt like there was some competing like city rap videos going around.
It's like an Arlington one.
Yeah, not as good.
Yeah.
But the other thing just scanning through here that I really enjoy is like the change, like your wardrobe change and your like hairdo change.
Yeah. Because I didn't have hair then, to be fair. It's all wigs and hats and such.
Yeah. I guess that's important to note on audio.
Yeah. So...
Is this somehow related to your like career move to like brand strategy?
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I think I knew. I mean, I was working at a bank inside of a grocery store at the time, and it was First Market Bank, awesome, great bank. Owned and run by the Ucrops initially, mm-hmm. sort of their values, and yeah, I knew then that I'm not a left-brained person. So trying to think through. Yeah, how do you pursue a career doing more creative stuff? So so that's how I think it led to me to figure out how do I make the jump mm-hmm. over into the work I'm doing now.
Yeah. So the question we get a lot is how the podcast came to be, or why we, you know, like why we're doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to take that one?
Yeah, I'll take that.
Listener mail.
Great question, Chris. Thank you. This question comes from Chris.
Yeah,
so I think I started kicking it around, and I approached you initially to be like, hey, can you build me a website?
Oh, yeah.
And I think...
I always forget about that.
And I think you had already done the listening room, and you were kind of like, oh, okay, well, I could kind of produce it. And I knew zero about any kind of fancy sound recording stuff. But I think for me... At the time, I was living in Church Hill, literally three blocks from the Metzger, which is a great restaurant, and three blocks from Mosby Court. So those two places are literally blocks from one another, and it's like two different worlds. And at the time, my office was on Broad Street across from Lowe's in the Marvin Lang building. And so I would drive to work and kind of cut through Mosby and see kids waiting for the bus there, drive down Lee Street on Lombardi and see the guys waiting for work in the Lowe's parking lot, park, go into work at my creative brand strategy agency, with exposed brick where people wear fine denim and drink great coffee. And one morning my boss was like, hey, I was thinking of gathering other creative agencies together and you know, maybe for a month and just having a coffee event. Maybe the first one could be about storytelling. And I was like, okay, like I understand that, but if you want an interesting story, what if we just went across the street and like talked to those dudes? So I think that was an itch that I got, that I felt this like disconnect between... Yeah, I think the world of the Metzger and the world of Mosby. And I still don't know how to connect those two worlds, but I think that was a part of the motivation for me to start a podcast where you just started talking to people around town to try to get different perspectives. And I think the idea being hopefully that by talking to people and understanding kind of the story behind the story and how that comes to life, that we would be able to listen in a new way. I don't talk about that a lot because I don't know that a podcast can deliver on that promise. Yeah, and I think the second thing, I think that was the first experience that got me thinking about that. And the second one, that summer, I mean, it's probably 2 or 3 years ago now, I was in San Francisco for work. We were doing client work, and we finished the work, and it was like a Thursday night, and we all went out to this bar, like 21st Amendment in the Mission District in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Super cool place, like heart of venture capital, Silicon Valley. And I'm like, oh, San Francisco, right? This is the place. They got, you know, grocery stores, people ride bikes, like it's cool and progressive and
the coolest.
Like public transportation, like everybody's very forward thinking. This is like the future, right? This is a great city. So we're there at the bar, and we're sitting there drinking our craft beer, and it's my coworkers and one of my coworkers, his friends met up with us. So I'm talking to this girl, Katie, and I'm like, oh, you know, Katie, like, tell me about San Francisco. Is it such a great city? She's like, yeah, you know, it's good. And I was like, well, tell me about public transportation. How's that? She's like, well, it's actually not that great. I was like, okay. And she was like, well, yeah, you know, it stops ever so many blocks. It's not very reliable, but Facebook, Google, and others have basically created their own private shuttles for their employees. And there's actually protests at those bus stops because they've essentially created a parallel infrastructure. And I'm like, okay. Sipping my beer. And she was like, and there's an urban legend that when Mark Zuckerberg first moved to San Francisco, he just kind of like scoped out the city, found the house he wanted, and just sent his assistant to knock on the door. It's me knocking on my coffee cup. Nice. To knock on the door and basically offered cash, like double the value. And so home values are rising. Transportation isn't great. So I'm sitting there thinking like, okay, there's probably a dude in the back that can't afford to live in the city and also can't get in to live in the city because of transportation. I'm like, okay, maybe this whole like city San Francisco thing isn't all cracked up to be. And so we finish up, like pay the check, walk out, and went out to our rental car, and the windows had been smashed, and like $5,000-$10,000 of like computers and all of our stuff had been taken. So super frustrated, pissed. But as I'm flying back, I'm just thinking like, what in a city like San Francisco, where you have a lot of upwardly mobile, like creative people, what's the responsibility of those people to the city? Like what's their responsibility as a citizen, right? So I was like, why is Google doing more? Why, you know, why aren't they getting involved in the life of the city? And I think they do a lot of great work overseas, and certainly if you're one of those massive organizations, it might not make sense for you to, I don't know, go down to City Hall of San Francisco. Like you can do things at scale with countries. Mm-hmm. And so I think in my frustration about seeing that disconnect, I felt a greater responsibility when I came back to Richmond to be like, okay, well, what is my responsibility? And like, how do I contribute to the life of the city as a creative person? And I think that you hear about this, the creative class, I'm using air quotes. And I think it's basically anyone that works in knowledge, right? So it's not, you're not making a widget, but it could be an accountant, a lawyer, someone in medicine, a teacher, people that work in knowledge. Essentially like what is our responsibility to the city and how do we create a community that's bigger than, just like, what can I get out of Richmond? So I think all that to say is all that was swirling. I'm curious in general. And there's a part of me that I just like, I walk into stores or see somebody on the street and I'm like, oh, I want to know what's that person's story. Like, tell me more about her. Like what, how did that guy get to be the way he is? So I think that for me was just, a lot of it was just like pure curiosity. It was like, oh, what if we just created a thing where I could sit down with people that I think are interesting and just ask them questions. Because you can't just do that. You can't just sit down with somebody for an hour and just fire questions at them. So even all that aside, I think
unless
it's just
you have microphones,
right? Like I think it's fun to have a thing where you can show up with a backpack and be like, "All right, police chief, I'm going to ask you just a rack of questions." Like I like that for the thing itself.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's a great format. I mean, I was being your friend for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen you just naturally want to do that. You know, like when you're sitting by a fire pit, I'm like, I'm going to go talk to Blaine because he's going to go, he's going to ask me 100 questions and we're going to have a good conversation.
Yeah.
And so when it came up, you know, I actually felt like when we first started talking about the podcast, I'm like, yeah, I mean, that makes total sense because it's kind of what you do anyway. And kind of like you're saying, it's just like, we just need a couple of microphones.
Yeah.
And a backpack full of gear. And it could get really interesting. And it has.
Two dudes and a backpack full of gear.
That's what we...
That should be our tagline.
Well, it was like the... That was the original title of the podcast, right?
Two dudes and a gear backpack. Yeah, I think that's right. I think there are times where socially, I want to ask, like, I want to ask the fifth and sixth and seventh question. Like, I want to keep going, but it's not socially appropriate to be like, well, tell me more about... When you said that thing, what did that actually feel like? Yeah. And if you're sitting around a table, people are like, all right, dude, slow your roll, bro. Yeah. And even like friends will ding me now, like if I'm grabbing a beer, like, oh, you podcasting me now? I'm like, no, it's just a good question. It's just a thoughtful question. It's not my fault that people don't ask thoughtful questions.
Oh, man, that's funny.
Don't ding me on that. Oh. I'm just curious.
You potting me right about now? You potting me?
You potting me, bro?
That's funny.
At the top of the show, we often talk about two people as like, you know, your personal and your public, right? Like, it's we're all two people. Like that, yes, that is true. But I think there's also another play on the name, which is basically that we in a lot of ways in life, like we live in tribes, and I think we draw lines, and there are a lot of lines in our country, but certainly in Richmond. The ones that are obvious, like black, white, urban, suburban, rich, poor, even like lawyer, hipster. And I think it at best sometimes. Folks on both sides of those lines can be indifferent. At worst, they can be adversarial. And I think it's easy, just in a lot of conversations, to feel like you're two adversaries or two enemies. But I think that if we're able to listen, we can come to realize that like we're two people. And like, yeah, we may not agree on everything, but ideally, if we're able to listen in a different way, I think we can, hopefully we can recover some of that. So I think on our best days, I hope the podcast contributes to that in some way. I think there's also like the two Richmonds of like public housing, and there's a lot of civic challenges, public schools. We also have a lot of great breweries and like great bakeries and a great food scene. And I think we can live in a city where we are interested in and value both of those things, like addressing the civic challenges, but also love the great food scene. And I think sometimes people gravitate towards one or the other, right? So it's like they only want to talk about like the great festivals and like the new brewery, but I think they're less interested in the complex history and challenges that we have. And I think on the other end of the spectrum, I think it's easy to get caught up in the baggage that we have as a community and not want to acknowledge like, yeah, but we can get a great pastry and we are making progress and moving along. And so how do you hold both of those realities and recognize that they're not mutually exclusive, but they actually contribute, and we need to recognize and talk about both of them. I think to build the a Richmond in a region that is thriving holistically. High horse rant end.
Yeah, but you know, that it's flourishing for as many people as possible, and many different types of people as possible that live here, have been here, who are moving here, all of them. And it really reminds me of the show with Josh Yates. We're talking about cities as like ecosystems, right, and not just the, you know, the public school and all the stuff that goes with the public school system, and then like the creative class, or like the makers, the brewers, you know, all that stuff. And actually, it's not so hard to draw the line between how these things are depending on each other, how they're sort of connected, and how how seemingly uncommon things can really affect each other. And that's what I've really enjoyed about a lot of our interviews, is sort of, you know, I'd start to draw the line and hope, you know, hopefully start connecting people. You know, like when somebody from the school board is talking about similar topics to somebody who's running a restaurant, like they, you know, hopefully can get to that common, that common ground. Because ultimately, like, Richmond has this way of making you love it here, and that means different things for different people, and that was a really interesting show, or you know, interview with Josh.
I love Richmond, and I think some of that is the ways that the people here have shaped me in the last like decade of being here. And there's a little bit of like, ask not what Richmond, Virginia can do for you. Ask what you can do for Richmond, Virginia. Yeah. Is that Kennedy? No, but I think if love is an action and not just like a feeling, to say you love Richmond, it shifts how you think about that. Mm-hmm. And I think love is seeking the highest good of the other, right? Like mm-hmm. if I love my wife, I'm going to go, if it's 11:30 at night and she left her phone charger downstairs and she's tired, I don't really want to do that thing, but I'm going to try, I'll probably try to go downstairs and get it. Right. Like, right. It's, I think it's a part of love is like stepping outside of yourself for the good of the other. So like, what does that mean for a young person being a citizen here in Richmond? I don't know what that means for each person. Mm-hmm. I think it was like Moses Foster who kind of made like, it was a throwaway point about like, it may mean just going out to eat and like supporting a restaurant. It could mean more than that for you. It could mean volunteering or working at a nonprofit, like the traditional things that we think of when it's like, go serve and volunteer. Helping. But yeah. I think there's a mindset of not just like going to the festival and doing the thing and like using Richmond for yourself, but how do you contribute? And I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. And I think some of the podcasts for me is, I think it helps me navigate that for myself. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Do you want to talk about other episodes that you like?
Yeah, I think, do you want to go for, who are you like, do you have like a top three or top four?
Top four. Yeah.
Top four, top three. I feel like top three is more classic. You could do a top three and like an honorable mention. Or what are the three that come to mind, Chris? You're looking at me weird.
Well, because like now that you said top three, I'm trying to put them in some sort of ranking. But
three that come to mind in no particular order.
Okay. First, Kendra Feather. Man.
Heard about her.
Yeah, she's done a lot of great stuff, a lot of great restaurants. But the thing I remember the most from her episode is that like she was talking about how she has a lot of dietary restrictions, and she has for a long time. And it was like this like mind-bending moment of like she understands, and like how she took over like Empanema. Like she understands the restaurant business. She knows what good food is, but half the amazing things that they make in the restaurants, like she can't eat it.
Yeah.
And I think she's just obviously everything she touches turns to gold. And to me, she's like very much a Richmond staple. Can you make a person a staple?
Yeah, yeah, you can. Okay. You definitely can.
Yeah, yeah. Or celebrity. I don't know. It's probably
she's an institution.
Yes, she herself is an institution.
An institutional staple. Well, yeah, it's like everything she touches turns to gold, but she's also allergic to half of the gold that she creates.
Yeah, yeah.
Metaphors on top of metaphors. Okay, so Kendra Feather.
It's really clear for people. And then I think the bike race in particular, the episode where you were walking around talking to people and giving, like that was our most journalistic episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoyed it because, you know, you do have a knack for like talking to strangers. I think. I don't know.
I think once it's like talking to a girl the first time or like you're approaching somebody. It's like, hey, sorry, can I ask you a few questions? So once I'm in, it's like the initial, I'm very like a people pleaser. So yeah. I don't want to bother your day.
Yeah. And, you know, I think there was a lot of like controversy around, you know, spending the money and doing this and that for the bike race. And I think there was still, you know, in my opinion, a lot of good things that happened because of it. But the way we treat things in retrospect is not always kind. And when I listen to that episode, if I go back and listen to it, it really captures the excitement and the joy people were experiencing being part of a sporting event that mm-hmm. size. Every Richmonder from all walks of life and a ton of people from out of town were here. We're out at the bike race. But what I really liked about it is when you were talking to some of the bikers from
Richmond Cycle Corps.
Richmond Cycle Corps.
Right.
And that kind of led us into the next story with Craig Dotson. And Craig is an awesome guy. And he's a friend. And like he's just 100% devoted to that work, the work that he's doing. And so I'm kind of doing a twofer, if you don't mind.
So Craig Dotson and Richmond Cycle Corps, for those that don't know, it's a cycling program for kids primarily from public housing. And Craig would say, I think that's a little bit of a Trojan horse. And yes, they have a cycling program, mm-hmm. but it's really a way to be in the lives of these kids. And it's mm-hmm. like he Craig particularly, like he's picking up kids when, you know, when they're out of school or when they've got a court appointment, like all kinds of crazy stuff that you don't hear about. Like he's in deep, all hours of the night.
Yeah. If they're not at practice, he goes to find them.
Right. And like he's driving around, knocking on doors.
Yep.
That guy, he's remarkable.
Yeah. So, I mean, and just hearing a little bit of an interview with some of those students on the team, it was at the end of that episode, And, like, I just really enjoyed how you were getting a lot of different flavors, and then you talked to them, and they had kind of had their own take on seeing the bike race and all the folks from out of town being in, like, you know, the east part of the city where they live. And, you know, I thought that was a really good sort of segue to talk about Craig and the work that he's doing down there. So
I remember there was this moment where I felt real dumb because I saw Craig and I knew him a little bit. And before, I think the first one of the kids that I went to interview, I think my first question was something dumb, like, who are you repping? And he was basically like, what are you talking about? And I was like, yeah, you're right. That was, I'm just going to be me and not try to like pander. Yeah. I just felt so dumb for a minute. Just like, dude, Blaine, just be yourself. You don't have to try to.
Yeah. And you know, I'm not a sports guy, Blaine.
Yeah.
I mean, I enjoy sports. But you know, to me that also was showing about like how, you know, people can rally around sports. A city can rally around sports. Mm-hmm. Sports can be a vehicle for helping kids get out of public housing.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was, those are ones I like to revisit a lot.
Kendra Feather, Bike Race. / Craig.
Oh, and Barb.
Oh, Barb.
Man, Barb is our
sweet,
most,
sweet Barb.
Our most recent episode. And the time we spent with her was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Because I think at 82, she has accomplished more than I could ever dream of doing. She works harder than any person and is staying, like, stays more positive than any person I've ever met.
Yeah.
And it's like one of those things where it's like surprising that her character and her personality is cloaked. Just because this is when I've met her, when I've encountered her, it's cloaked in like the body of a 82-year-old woman.
Yeah.
But she taught herself carpentry, and she built out this store with, you know, her son, but, you know, on her own. And, you know, she spent her life in education, and like half the stories that she told us on air and off air, like, were about teaching her employees, who are mostly college students, how to do things and how to think about their life and their work and how to stay positive.
I think she just does it. Like, I don't think she has like a clear perspective that she would like break it down. I think that's just a part of who she is and how she lives her life. She's just like doing things and teaching others. And
right. Cause even when you were like asking her questions, like about that kind of thing, at first I kind of felt like she was shrugging us off, but then I realized that she's just like that. She's like, no, like, why wouldn't I like work super hard and teach myself how to do stuff and, you know, and not let life get me down.
Yeah.
And like all these, you know, tragedy, basically, like she's not going to let it slow her down at all.
And I was, I knew more of her story going in. Like there were a couple of things that she said that she floored me, like living in a train car.
Yeah.
Because I'm sitting there, I didn't know what to say back to her when she said that. I'm just like, okay, well, I'm going to let this moment breathe. And I think on some level you read stories about her in the paper, or you see her on TV, and the story that's told is like, little old lady, her son died. Now she opened up a coffee shop. Isn't that touching?
Yeah.
And I think that if I'm working for the 6 o'clock news and I got to get the story out, that's going to be the story, and it is touching. But I like that in sitting down with her for 60 minutes, you got to hear more of the background that gave context for how she shows up, which I think, was.
Yeah. I mean, that's like times 1,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, Barb.
So how about you? Do you have a top three?
Yeah.
It's trying to pick your favorite children.
Yeah, you know? That's true. I think my three, I think you've already mentioned Josh Yates, which shifted, I think gave me more fuel for how to think about cities and regions, and the one that I think about the most. Mm-hmm. That's an honorable mention. I think Valley Haggard was great. Yeah. She was probably the most sort of personally revealing in a way. And I think I appreciated that as an interviewer. I mean, just so she's a writer in town. She dealt with alcoholism for years, and I think has worked through it and is working through it. So I think a lot of it was about learning to love yourself. But mm-hmm. I mean, she lived in Colorado and got engaged to a rancher and just has these like crazy stories that are all true. So I appreciated her sharing that. And I think it gave me a renewed sense, even as an interviewer, that there's a responsibility that comes with asking someone questions, that you're asking them to reveal something, mm-hmm. whether it's on a podcast or over a dinner table. It takes some level of courage to be like, hey, I'm going to ask you this question. It might be kind of personal, but I think you can care for people well. So I think I kind of learned that in that interview.
I also really appreciated her honesty in that. I feel like a lot of people sit down to talk about what they think that you're going to find the most interesting about them. And I think on the show, like, we've done a really good job of like getting into people's story. Like when we interviewed LeVar Stoney, I feel like we were asking him questions during a campaign season that nobody seemed to care about. Like, how did you grow up? And like, how, you know, people always care about that stuff, but in the, you know, the election season, no one's really asking you those questions. And I think that like another service of asking people to tell their story, we actually get to reflect back to them.
Yeah.
You know, and like the process of them telling you, and I know Valley's written a lot about a lot of her story. But you know, I think that's been one of the most interesting things, when doing this podcast.
Yeah.
It's like giving people the opportunity to say things that they don't normally say a lot.
Yeah.
About themselves.
And I think I hope it causes them to be self-reflective in a good way. And I think it can be, I think it could be honoring to ask someone questions and even be able to reflect back. Say, oh, it sounds like this. Is that right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow. I hadn't.
Yeah.
I don't want to go like super wonky on like the nature of asking good questions, but I think that,
Next book.
I think like in the way that we live life day to day, and even just in my personal life, sometimes like I'm tired. I don't feel like showing up, that I think sometimes I tell myself that I'm not going to ask this person that, I'm not going to ask them a follow-up question. I'm not going to ask them. Sometimes I'm just tired, but I think it's also can be, I don't want to impose on them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we can be like ships passing in the night. You can care. You can miss caring for someone well by not asking them
right.
a meaningful question.
Right.
Anyways. Okay. So, yeah. So Valley, I'm going to say Tom Silvestri.
Oh, yeah.
So I thought, so Tom was really interesting, and there's something about interviewing someone that is over 50, just because they have more life experience than someone in their like 20s or 30s, and hearing them like think and reflect. And I think that one I was interested in. The Richmond Times-Dispatch is a longstanding Richmond institution. They do great work. They don't always hit it on the head. They have a long history, and if you've been around for decades, you're not going to be perfect either. So I think there's, I love that they're a longstanding institution in a way that a podcast is not.
What do you mean?
For example. But I was interested in just how he thinks about, you're taking the reins of this institution that will, that has existed before you and will exist after you. And there was a throwaway question that I asked him, what kind of the way that he answered it, which is basically like, how do you think about your legacy? And he kind of said, oh, they won't remember me.
Yeah. That was so interesting.
And it was like a punch in the chest, because I think I am self-absorbed, and I think even like, what's my, I think our generation thinks, oh, it's my personal brand, and I'm going to make an impact on the world, and I'm going to make a difference. And here you have this guy who's running a media institution in our region that touches over 500,000 people a day, and to have him be like, I'm basically going to be forgettable.
Yeah. I remember that.
Was like weird and refreshing, and I think true. And I think it just made me think differently about like my work, and like, yes, I don't know, like 50 years from now, nobody's going to know about this podcast. Like, so how does that change the way that I approach like work and like family life and being a person that lives here? And I think it's like weirdly freeing, because it's like, oh, yeah. Like I can go and have conversations and eat dinner and do my work as best I can. And, you know.
Yeah. And I also think it speaks to like back to the question of how do sort of each individual person participate in the ecosystem of the city or the, where you live.
Ecosystem. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Such a good word. I probably said it 7 times by now, but, yeah, I really love the idea of sort of like, you know, I personally, Chris, don't have to be the superstar of public transit.
Yeah.
You know,
you don't have to save the city.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, there are people who are working very hard on those kind of things, but I need to be able to participate, go to city council when I need to, ride the bus, you know, like just as an example, but like, don't, you know, you still are part of the institution or part of the ecosystem or,
yeah,
but I think we tend to, people our age tend to think that, you know, kind of have that individualistic mindset.
Right.
Yeah.
Everybody's got a role to play, but every battle might not be yours. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Metaphors.
Again. On a metaphor.
So Valley, Tom Sylvester. And then I think the third one for me, Chief of Police.
Really?
Alfred Durham. Yeah. I think is the one that comes to mind. That one was a little bit of a coup. That was a podcast get that I felt proud of. I mean, I had a friend that knew somebody that worked in like the legal department at the police department. So I had to cold call a lady down there and be like, hey, I'm a random guy. I got this podcast. And in 5 minutes, basically be like, I'm not crazy. We want to talk to the main dude.
Yep.
Can you pass me along? And she was like, oh, that sounds great. Yeah, she passed me to the media guy. Media guy doesn't know me. Talk to the media guy. Again, like, I'm not crazy. I got this thing. Are you interested? He was like, yeah. Yeah, and he was, number one, Chief Alfred Durham. Whoa, I would not want that dude's job.
Yeah.
So hard. I mean, given the national conversation around, just police and community policing and, I mean, there's no telling how many tragedies we've avoided here in town and under-resourced. He's on the front lines, literally. Mm-hmm. He's out there. And I think with him, the thing that I was most interested in trying to ask him is basically, you are an African-American male. You lost your brother to gun violence. Mm-hmm. You're also the face of law and order. So in this swirl of Blue Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter, there's hyper-focus, and you're right in the nexus of all of that. You've been a victim and you're also required to enforce it. Like, how do you think about all that? His answer was great. You can go back and listen to it. His answer was great. And he was, I think, personally revealing just about losing his brother, mm-hmm. to gun violence in a way that he didn't have to be. Mm-hmm. And I appreciated that. I think it was just instructive for what motivates him. And he's a guy trying to do a job and do the best he can. And it's really mm-hmm. important. And there's a lot of responsibility. I have a lot of respect for him in that respect.
Yeah.
Hashtag Durham. dumb things. What dumb things? I feel like there's like 3 main ones.
Oh, gosh. Talk about personally revealing, Blaine.
Talk about dumb things.
Do you want me to start with mine?
Yeah.
So one time, Blaine, like you didn't know this, I lost an entire interview of audio footage. I don't know where it went. You know, I deal with a lot of media cards in my life, and this one particularly fun one disappeared out of thin air. But we got a re-record of it, so.
We did a re-record.
This is like the blooper reel.
Yeah, blooper reel. I think I have 2. I'll finish on a high note. The first one was, I'm feeling a little bit anxious even talking about it. So Valley Haggard again, maybe we'll rerun it, but we interviewed this great, I did an interview with her. It was great. Just, I mean, walking me through her whole story. It was almost, my brother was like, it felt like a confessional. At the end, she read this piece. And I take off my headphones and I look up. She goes, how was it? I was like, Valley, it was great. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. And I looked down at the recorder and the numbers were not moving, which meant that I never pressed the button to record that interview and just felt,
yeah, that was a good
one. Real dumb.
Yeah.
And she was so gracious, and it was like, it was a moment where a lot of what she was talking about thematically about working through things and not being hard on yourself. I think she was like, this is just a great opportunity to practice just what we were talking about. And I was like, yeah, I guess, but I feel terrible.
Wow.
So she came back again, like a couple weeks later and re-recorded it.
And it was still good. It was still good. Really good.
And she was like, this is kind of like Groundhog's Day. She's like, we should just meet up every 2 weeks and just have the same interview. And I was like, yes.
Valley. Yeah.
So she was great. So that was one. The second one, Glenn Sturdivant, who was running for office. He is now in the Virginia Senate. Republican dude with great hair. Solid hair. I don't know if I notice hair more because I don't have it, but we recorded with him early in the morning. And Chris, you were not there. And this is, I think both of these were right around the time where you had taught me, I was leaving the nest as a recorder and learning how to like press the record button,
push the button.
The mics. And with Glenn, and he's running for office, and it was like 7:30 in the morning, and halfway through, the thing just shut off. And I was like, luckily I caught it, and this was after Valley, and I was like, Glenn, I'm sorry, but this thing just shut down. I don't know what to do. I'm sorry.
And I forgot about that one.
And he was like, oh, don't worry about it, man. He's like, yeah, we'll... And again, he came back, a week or two later.
So you called it off, and he came back.
So I called it. Because I was like, all right, don't panic. Be in control. You have competency. Just be straightforward with this gentleman that has offered his time.
Uh-huh.
And 2 weeks later, he came. And for some reason, I don't know why I remember this, but he texted me. And he's running for the Senate. This is like a politician for, there's only, 40 of these men and women. And he was like, I'm running a little late. Like, I can't meet at 7:30. I'll have to meet at 7:45. I was like, all right, cool. No worries. Like, you're an important person. You got all the responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
He shows up and he's like, yeah, man, thanks for waiting. He's like, yeah, my wife and I went to Krispy Kreme. I was like, what? He's like, he like gotten up with his wife and like had a Krispy Kreme date. And he's like, yeah, I ate a couple donuts. I just thought that was very funny.
That's awesome.
Like Glenn Sturdivant, like your representative in whatever district.
Has priorities.
Yeah. I was like, man, I like that. You're going on a Krispy Kreme date with your wife. If you need to push me back, you push me back, Glenn Sturdivant.
Right on.
Anyways. So those are dumb things.
Man. Well, I mean, I'm sure there's more.
Yeah.
But, for all of the technical mistakes, I put them firmly in the category of, like, you only do it once.
That's true.
Like, you don't make that same mistake twice.
Yeah. Because it's only a mistake if you don't learn from it, Chris.
You're right.
These are all just learning experiences.
You're right. So right.
Last thing before we wrap, Chris Payne.
Yeah.
You're about to be a dad soon. I'm about to be a dad soon.
Yeah, same week.
Let's talk dad stuff.
All right. Do we have to make dad jokes?
I think
I've been brushing up.
Pull out your book. What are puns. How do you think about that? / what are you excited about? What gives you pause?
Man.
And you're expecting a little girl?
Yes.
Fathers, be good to your dog.
Oh, J-May. Look out.
John Mayer.
Do we have to pay him for talking to singing a song on there?
Nah.
Okay. I don't know, man. I didn't know you were going to ask me this question.
Ooh.
But I'm really excited because, I like my wife a lot.
Yeah.
And I think she's going to be a great mom. And, it's like really a weird thing to think about adding a person to your family.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been married 5 years and we are pretty good at,
you got a good thing going.
Yeah. But, I'm really excited about that. And, I hope it's like a mini version of my wife and not a mini version of me, because that would be really weird. But, I think it's kind of this weird mutual, thing where she's excited to see me as a dad. I'm excited to see her as a mom. And,
mm-hmm.
And I think I have like all the normal hesitancies, but I often say that like, I'm not nervous about, we have a baby and we can't do this stuff anymore. And I think my life has been evolving in a way where, I'm 34 years old. And if I hadn't done all the cool things I wanted to do by now, then that's my fault. like that's the kind of like thing that I'm feeling. And like, this is the time where you have children. And I feel like I'm a little bit older than some of my friends for their first child and stuff. But to be responsible for a person's life is kind of daunting.
It's like a whole thing.
Yeah,
I've heard,
but we've taken all the classes, so
there's a lot of good classes.
Yeah,
I too have taken some of those. Do you feel equipped because of the classes?
Somewhat.
Yeah.
There's a lot of fluff in there too.
I feel like half of it is like, here's a bunch of information, and you walk out and you're like, oh, I'm less dumb than I was.
Yeah, that's
it's
about
just
it.
Like
yeah.
Just the confidence. I'm gonna forget 80% of this, but I know how to do a swaddle now.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, I haven't even had the swaddle thing.
I could teach you.
Okay.
I could teach you.
Okay. I need that.
I think.
Well, we'll be at the hospital at the same time, so you could just come like swaddle.
There's
my
probably
daughter.
Like YouTube videos.
You know, I haven't even tried that. Like I think that's a great idea.
Fathering by YouTube.
That's how I learned how to do anything. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
What is our society coming to?
Yeah. What do you think?
About dadding.
Yeah.
I think similar. When I consider the downsides of having a kid because I'm selfish, I know what it's like for someone to interrupt me when I'm reading a book, right? Like, uh-huh. I like my time. Uh-huh. And so I recognize that having a child will encroach on your time, and my time is not my own. But I realize that I don't have any experience of creating a small being and seeing that being run towards you and smile and laugh.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, I have no analog for that in my life now. So I'm excited for that.
Yeah. The assumption is that that outweighs the...
Right. And people say that it does, right? Yeah, like, right. Oh, it's hard, but it's wonderful. Yeah. Or like,
what does that mean?
Yeah. So I'm excited to be ushered into the brother and sisterhood of having a kid. Mm-hmm. And I think the other thing that I would say is I think about stuff. Like, I'm like, the internal monologue in my brain goes, it's just loud. And sometimes it's like super deep, like, oh, these relational dynamics. But it could also be like totally off the wall and like weird and random. But there's always that the machinery is running, and it could either be thoughtful or like super fun, but it comes from the same place.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that as you grow up, and you like work and you have responsibilities and you got to buy groceries, I think it can be easy to like linearly go through your life and like step, do the thing.
Yep.
And there's something about like hanging out with kids that helps you to recover like the childlikeness about life. And I think this idea that the world is a big place. Mm-hmm. We live in a world now where a thunderstorm, I can just pull it out on my phone and like, oh, there's a thunderstorm. But it's, and I think in that sense, sometimes life senses to become big.
Mm-hmm.
So I think like the thoughtful Blaine would say, I think I'm excited to recover a sense of wonder.
Mm-hmm.
And like being led by my child in that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, I think if you're in your 30s and you're a grown dude, and you get down on the ground and just play, that's weird. But if you have a child, like, you can get away with it. And it's like, oh, look at how loving that dad is. So I think I'm looking forward to like recovering a sense of wonder about the world. Mm-hmm. Because of this little dude that's about to show up in my house soon.
Baby boy.
Little baby boy.
Blaine Jr.
Blaine Jr.
So, Blaine, we're both going to be dads.
We are. Truth.
What does that mean for the pod?
What does that mean? Isn't that the question? So we're going to take a break for probably, I would say, a few months.
Yeah.
Of new episodes.
Yep.
Of new episodes. I mean, I want to keep doing it if you're cool.
Yeah.
With that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think a couple things. One, I want to get feedback from people. Mm-hmm. So if you're hearing this, there is a survey in the show notes, which I will create between the recording of this and the going of this live, but just to get, I think, feedback on who you are as our audience. I think secondly, if you have any suggestions of folks that you would want us to interview in the future, currently you can just shoot me an email, blaine.lay@gmail.
Mm-hmm.
On the contact page on our website. And I think some of that is that I and we are bounded by our relationships or what we read. So if you have any ideas and you're like, oh, you should talk to this person, shoot us an email. And it's more helpful if you tell us the reason why that person, not just like, hey, here's Bob. You should interview Bob. He's great. Mm-hmm. Bob works at the place.
Why Bob?
Why Bob? Like, what's his background? How does he think about things? Provide us with a little bit of context. And if you know Bob or you know Roberta, because it could be a female as well, just tell us why, and if you have a contact, that's great.
Yeah, and I think we should also spend some time cleaning up some of our website and making that a little easier to make suggestions on there as well. So we are definitely planning to spruce that up a little bit.
Sprucey McBruce spruce?
Mm-hmm.
as they says this.
Says who says?
Yeah, and I think yes, who says that? yeah, but I enjoy doing this. Mm-hmm. It requires time, so I think it's how do you streamline it and make it work in our new lives as dads?
Yeah,
and I think in the next, like when we do go back, I think I would want to do more. So like the bike race where we interviewed multiple people and we edit it together, mm-hmm. which just mm-hmm. requires time of editing. It's different than sitting down with somebody and pressing pause. I've always wanted to do like a Bird Theater special, specifically Mighty Bob Golich that plays the Mighty Wurlitzer.
Yeah, the organ.
I just want to know everything. I want to know everything about that dude. Yeah. And then I also want to do a run of like six or eight episode run. Basically about how we got here, like just looking back at Richmond, men and women, black, white. Maybe you start with Ben Campbell, who like literally wrote the book about Richmond recently. I have not confirmed with him. I have not asked. But yeah, I think Ben Campbell would be a great way to kick that off. But I say we keep doing the podcast.
Yeah. Is there anything else we need our listeners to know before we cut?
I don't think so. I just want to say thank you, listening public people. No, I think we put time and energy and effort into it. I think there's a group of people that listen to it, and we appreciate that.
Yeah.
Because, I don't know, people are busy, and whenever I run into family and friends, and it's just I always assume that you don't care and you don't listen. So if you do listen, we're thankful for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, we're just talking to ourselves.
Yeah. Thanks for spending time with digital us.
Yeah.
And if we see you in person, we'll hang out with you in real life.
Nice.
Yeah, it's like a virtual real.
Well, Blaine Lay, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, Chris. Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
I just mocked you. Yeah, that's right. Are you cool with it?
I fully accept that.
Okay.
You can subscribe to the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Our theme music is by No BS Brass. If you already subscribe to the show, go on iTunes and leave us 5 stars and a comment. It helps other people find the show. And check out the link to the survey in the show notes. We'd love to know more about our listeners and what you guys want to hear. We'll be taking a short break, but we'll be back soon. See you later.